if you could just begin, just tell me your name, where you were born, when you were born, your parents, you know, just give me a little bit of background about you.
Okay. James Edward Davis Jr. And I was born at Chesapeake, Virginia. They call it Air Hall, but anyway, about 7 miles up the road. About 7 miles up the road.
Okay.
And I was born in 1933, so I started school over here about 1939, something like that.
Okay. And when you started school, did you begin at the Rosenwald School?
Yes. I started there in 39 and I graduated out there in 46.
Oh, congratulations. Mm-hmm. What was, can you remember, what was your very first memory of the school when you first started?
Maybe the fact that I had to walk all the way over there. No, at that time, it was such a thing, you definitely walked to school, so I lived up on Jefferson, and from Jefferson, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 6 blocks, and then it used to be down here, this overpass, it used to be a steps that went up on that end, right near the pharmacy there, was a set of steps that went up the side of that overpass, and we walked all the way over there, and down to the school for the 7 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Nice.
Yeah. Was it a nice walk? Were the seasons good to you?
Yes. In fact, it was so nice. I had a friend that he decided he wanted to play hooky, and his mother got a whip and whipped him all the way over to the school, kind of helped to assure that he got there.
How old was he when that happened?
Oh, you're talking, but it's been 8, 9 years old, something like this. Yeah.
Did you walk in a group? Did you have brothers and sisters that went with you?
Well, see, in my case, I had an older sister, so she was probably walking with me. And the younger children, maybe 2 or 3 years later, because I was, my baby sister was 2 years younger than me, and then the two boys was 3 years younger than me. So it was children, but there's plenty of children because everybody walked. It wasn't no special character that everybody walked to school, except maybe on a rainy day.
Yeah.
Somebody might have some transportation, but we always, that was the transportation for school.
Wow. And I know the schools, they were built, that your school was built in 1930s, so was it still kind of new feeling to you when you got there, or had it been well used by other children?
No, I would think it was still in good shape, and like you say, it was 30, so at that time, it wasn't beat up or burned down or nothing. It was built for us, and like you say, not that long before, so it was still looking good. In fact, I'd say the building don't look as bad now, but it's been 40 years ago. But it was looking good then,
yeah.
Inside and out.
What did it look like? Can you remember any specifics about it? Was it brick? Was it wood?
Oh, brick. That was one of a few Rosenwald schools that was built out of brick.
Wow, okay.
If you check, and I got some paperwork around here somewhere, one of a few Rosenwald schools that were built out of brick.
Wow. Was it nice and comfortable in there, or was it drafty at all?
No, it was comfortable. They had a good heating system there and so forth. Yes, and wasn't it drafty at all?
Good. I was wondering, how many classrooms were there?
Four. There's four big classrooms.
Wow, so you guys had a big school.
Yes, you've never seen that school.
Not yet.
Shame on you.
She's showing us later. So
we're going after.
Oh,
I like
oh.
to have them hear yeah. about it and then.
It was four classrooms,
mm-hmm.
and I'd say each classroom was about four times as big as this room here.
Wow. About how many students fit in a classroom?
Oh, there. I would say they had two or three classes in each one of them. I'm bad for estimating, but at that time, I'd say we had easily 40 children in each room, easily.
Wow. Well, were you guys separated by grades, or was it separated by levels of knowledge?
He had four classrooms, four rooms, and the first room was primer, first, I think, and second, three class. The second classroom had third, fourth, and maybe the fifth, and then the last classroom had the sixth and the seventh grade. When I was over there, they weren't using but one. They were using three, so they had one classroom was basically empty.
Why was it empty? Was it used for community, or was it?
I assume it just wasn't that many students at that time that it was needed.
Mm-hmm. Was the school used more after you left?
I wouldn't say necessarily more, but it was continued. I talked with someone else later, and she was saying that they were using for all four rooms when she was over there, but she come along, like I say, some later.
Mm-hmm.
But it was three of it was used regular, and then we had room for a little lunch room that was maybe the size of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had across the hall from that the principal's office, which is also about the size of this.
It's a good size office.
Yeah. it was a very well built and very nice school. Only thing it was, we had our toilets was outside. We had to walk about the length of a block, two-thirds of a city block.
Okay.
But the girls was over on that side of the yard, and the boys was on this side of the yard, but they were outhouses.
Hmm.
You know what an outhouse is.
Yeah. So was that pretty normal to have outhouses around then?
Oh yes. Yep. And I think some of the schools, when the county started building, they maybe had that. In fact, you might find some of the county school might have had their outhouses to a point, but like the one in Cape Charles, yeah, there, I think their schools always had the indoor toilets and so forth.
When you attended the Rosenwald School, did you know anybody that went to the county schools?
Yes, because, see, in our case, if you lived in Cape Charles, that's where you went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then other children, occasionally, you know, around the county and so forth, they all got on the school bus and had to ride to school on the school bus.
So how was it different for you going to the Rosenwald School and not going with the other children on the school bus?
It was no problem. It's a lot of things like this. If nobody ever tells you the difference, you don't know the difference, you don't care about the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, I walked over there all 7 years. And it was just what everybody did. And you might find that it was a lot of schools throughout the county that they were also, to a degree, they walked to school. Many of them walked to school. And the schools were much more or less centered into the neighborhood. Well, just like that, they built them more or less to the neighborhood. And so it was no problem. But things like that, nobody tell you the difference, you don't know the difference, it don't make no difference.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody walked to school, I mean, and it wasn't those buses to go out of here, so the Cape Charles children over here, the white children, again, was no bus there either. If you went to that school over there, you walk from wherever you lived in Cape Charles, you walk to that school. And so, again, nobody tells you the difference, you don't know the difference, so it don't matter.
It's true. Now, what was What was the education like inside the school? Did you feel you learned a lot? Did it benefit you later in life?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it was good. In fact, I remember an old lady, her name was Alice Moses, mm-hmm. and she taught the primer in the first grade and the second grade, and that old lady from regular classroom education, she also took the time for music class. She herself was a music teacher, and so for programs and acting and so forth. Back in that time, you didn't have a special ed teacher, nothing of the kind, but you learned to play act and so forth. And we had an auditorium in that building. I didn't mention that. It was a nice big auditorium there. I don't know when you show up here. The auditorium is a mess now, but the auditorium was, I'd say, it was as big as two of them classrooms, if not three of them classrooms. It was a nice big auditorium, got stage and everything. Stage is still up there, and it was a well-built situation. It was nothing cheap and junky about it. It wasn't nothing except the fact that it just happened to be what was allotted at that time in life.
Mm-hmm. You said Miss Moses was the teacher for the primer, first and second grade. Do you remember any of your other teachers?
Oh, yes. It was another lady named Mrs. Jeanette Joins, and she was sort of all of these were more or less, they wasn't no somebody just out of college. These were, had a little age on and so forth, so they were middle-aged people, but her name was Jeanette Joins. And many times I'd ride past the house where she used to live out in Fairview, and I remember her from then. And so she was, again, I think all of them were good teachers. It's just the fact that each one had his own character and whatnot there, but Mrs. Moses, she never had to deal with the principal. She knew how to get her a metering stick, a yardstick, a switch, and if the boys or anybody didn't know how to be obedient, she didn't send you to the principal.
She took care of it herself?
She took care of herself. And Professor Smith, W.H. Smith, again, he wasn't a hard man, a good teacher, whatnot. Then I think they all did a very good job, and I wouldn't complain about either one of them as far as a teacher. I wouldn't have complained as far as the building or nothing about it as a school. And he, again, he was principal, but he'd get out there with the boys and he taught sports. He'd get out there, shoot marbles with the boys. He'd get out there and play basketball and whatnot. That he taught the sports to the boys and everything out there. So it was, again, I think it was a very, very, very good school.
Good. What were your favorite subjects? Did you like music? Did you like sports?
I like sports, but not a lot. And my daddy wouldn't let me go out there and play sports, but back then he didn't want to worry about somebody getting their leg broke. And so he would let me play no games and none of the games. And I had two younger brothers that come along 3 years later. And one of them was a four-letter man in high school, but I didn't get a chance to play none of the games. But no regrets. I think he did what he felt was best for me and so forth. So I didn't have that many things that I think of as a favorite, but.
So the last grade you attended was seventh grade?
Seventh grade over there.
Did you go on to school after that, or did you go to work?
Yes. Then after seventh grade, see, we went to the high school, the county high school.
Mm-hmm.
The white children had their high school, I think, here. But the Rosewall school was elementary school. And after the elementary school, we catch the bus then and ride to the high school, which was 12, 14 miles up the route.
Was the high school, when you went, was it segregated? Did you guys have a separate high school?
Oh, yes. At that time, everything was segregated. Like I said, you hear me say white school. The children down here, they went over here. And again, they went here, we went over there. And then the time of high school for the blacks, we catch the bus and ride, like I said, 14 miles up the road and so forth. And, but until they removed the segregation, which was, let's see, I left there in 1949, I left the high school and I went to New York, but it was, at that time it was still segregated, but by that time they built a high school, the county built a high school, so then when they did that, they made everybody go to the new high school. And they later built a new middle school, because when they started putting the big high school in there, they had what they call a high school and middle school. And so the middle school took from 8th grade, 8th, 9th, I think something like 10th, and about that time too, they also put, I think, the 12th grade in there. So, but again, when they made the changes, you go with the change. During those times, everybody didn't get an attitude about whether it was segregated or whether it was not. And again, you know the difference, but like I say, nobody complained because nobody has, they're instigating that much of a difference in it.
Yeah. Do you remember when the Board versus Brown of the Brown versus Board of Education decision came down in 1954 that said the schools couldn't be segregated anymore?
I don't remember, but I was in New York at the time. I left there in 50, and I went to Brooklyn, New York, and I graduated out of a trade school. I went to Brooklyn, New York, Brooklyn Automotive, so there I learned trade as a mechanic. So that's when they made them change. But in New York already basically had their segregation was over with. They done already gone through those changes.
So when you moved from Brooklyn back to here, right? Was it different moving from a mixed school or a mixed area back to Cape Charles?
A difference, again, like I said, if nobody instigates problems, you don't end up with problems.
True.
But that was as it was. Again, the trade school I went to, they were blacks, whites, everybody, and I say everybody because there was quite a mixture there. And again, you take what comes, and it's the same old thing. It's just like I remember one day we had, as a teacher, I didn't ever know what a detention class was until I got to New York. But this little fellow, he's a small featured teacher, and I wouldn't say he was a bad guy, but when we kept noise in class and we wanted to have our little mischief poking around in class, many times the teacher said, they sent us out of class, and they sent us class that meant we went to the detention class after school. And this little guy that had the detention class, his name was Raskin, I remember. And he always very nicely let us know, he says, now, for everything you get, there's a price you have to pay. You had your fun in class today, and now you pay the price. You keep us there half hour also after class. But it was part of what come in school then. Again, I never regretted it, and I didn't never see him as a bad guy. Somehow I stayed out of mischief. I said many times I was only fingerprinted for the military and so forth. I never have gotten into mischief there. I got a few whippings though. I remember the principal we had over here, W.H. Smith, and I don't remember what the occasion was and what it was about, but I knew enough profanity and whatnot that I told him what he could do for me. And when I did that, he got a switch and he gave me a whipping. And by the time I got home, that message then got to my daddy, so I got another whipping.
Oh boy.
That was the way they did things those days. You didn't argue about what the teacher did to you. The teachers, and although my father would tell him, I remember many times he would tell him, don't put your hands on, don't slap my children, don't put your fists up at my children. They out of order, you get a whip, a stick, or a switch, or so forth, put a whipping on them, but don't you slap them upside their head, don't you put your hand up. And like I say, by the time I got a whipping over there at the school, when I got home, I got another one. And it was a type of thing you were taught, I was anyway. You don't argue with the teachers, you don't fuss with the teachers, the teachers there to teach you. And again, I'm 80 years old and I only remember fingerprints for the military or so for a job or something. I never was any real mischief. I wasn't such an angel, but that was my part in life.
Do you think the schools today would be better if the teachers took a switch to the kids sometimes?
Yes. 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 Now, again, I think it goes all the way up the ladder, because like I said, that teacher, I remember my daughter, she come along and I think she went to the school. By that time they done changed over, they done segregated and they done closed the school down. But she had teachers there that would give her an X for talking in class and so forth there. And so when I get the report card into the X there, and she said, well, I wasn't doing nothing. She just put that on there. She didn't mean too much about it. And I called the teacher. She said, I put an X on there because it was excess talking, and I meant you to do something about it. And again, you had to do what you had to do. And I feel right now that those little things like that help to correct a child and bring up a child. And like right now, she's 50 years old and so forth, but again, never been in any mischief or so forth there. She learned a lesson and she studied good and she got to a decent place in life now that she's kind of earned a salary, a fair salary or whatnot there.
Does she still live around here?
No, she's in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
What in fact, up on Marlboro, Maryland, but she works in the D.C. area, works with the government.
Wow. So must be pretty proud of her for that.
Oh, yes. Like I say, she, I remember when I was, when she was getting ready to go to college, I said, now, you stay out of trouble and stay out of mischief and whatnot there. And I'll see you through and best I can, we'll get you through college one way or another. And she did and I did.
So when you went to mechanic school, did the Rosenwald School help you prepare for mechanic school, or did you find out about that on your own?
I don't remember for sure, but the Rosenwald didn't, they didn't have a trade per se, they didn't have no skill per se, and I guess between an uncle or some of the family that lived in New York, I learned about up there, like they had different schools that for some for automotive mechanic and some for electrical and some for various other things. And so I think I kind of got aware that up there for a trade, automotive trade.
You said you went into the army, the military?
Yes.
What'd you do in the military?
I worked on diesel locomotives.
Wow.
See, again, I had the mechanics, automotive, and so when I was when I was drafted, I was drafted and I was assigned to an automotive mechanic school. But knowing by this time there was a difference between automotive mechanic and diesel mechanic, and so I was drafted under and sent for automotive, and then I took an extra year to take a choice of school. When I took the choice of school, then the choice I took for diesel. And so actually, like it's cross over here now, the diesel locomotives, that's more or less the trade at that time, was because can go, your locomotive was all steam stuff like that was at the time when they was converting over so forth. So they built diesels, and I learned diesel as a trade. And so again, I felt it was more of a future in it as a trade.
Yeah. Did you stay in the military for a long time?
No, no. 3 years and I got out. And I got out and I still work with more or less mechanic work.
Mm-hmm. So when did you meet your wife?
I got married the first time in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as it happens in many cases, in that case, it didn't last that long, although it lasted 30-some years. And so my last marriage was 7 years ago, so.
Well, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. So.
So did you, once you were out of the military, did you continue to work with the diesel locomotives, or did you?
I had a problem getting a job for diesel.
Mm.
So I ended up working on construction, but on that construction site I had some diesel, and it wasn't a locomotive diesel, but it was a commercial diesel, which the heart of it's the same, it's just the purpose is a little different. But if you know diesel, diesel is diesel. So
you're talking over my head. I can drive a car, that's about it.
it's the same thing with a car, you know. So you got different makes, different models and so forth there. But they all kind of travel the same way. They put an engine in it, you got to shift your gears and so forth there. And so you go back and forth to school, or you get out, you might want to run up and down the highway, you might want to, who knows, different purposes, but
mm-hmm.
same.
That's interesting. That, did you make a good living off of working on the construction and working with diesels and stuff?
I say fair.
Fair?
Nothing to brag on, but fair.
No.
I would have loved to have had more of an income, but I'd say I did fair.
Yeah.
I had no cause to complain.
How did your work and how did your job sites compare to those of like the white construction workers or the white diesel workers?
It's a difference. Those are some of the times when you finally see some of the differences, and some of you can do something about it and some of you can't. And so like in my case, I remember I worked over here at Bayshore, and a mechanic over there was making it one time, I remember we was making like $6 and change an hour, but I noticed the white boy was getting maybe 20 cents more than I was getting.
Mm.
They got their jobs that, and somehow, and when you get to arguing with them and whatnot and so forth, they were getting 20 cents more than I was, or sometimes it was the preferable job, and this one might get shot from one where, and I didn't, but that came with the program, and I learned to do my job so that wherever I was I could handle it, and the little 20 cents didn't send me to the poorhouse. So,
okay. So you came back and you worked around here, right?
Yeah. Well, see, in between here and there, I left the military in '56.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in Brooklyn Automotive. I worked in the Brooklyn area from '56 to about '68.
Mm-hmm.
And then from '68, I come back home, and I stayed around here 8-10 years. And I think I went back to Washington, D.C. I worked in Washington, D.C. for 12, 15 years.
Wow.
And again, mechanic is mechanic, and so I had a job, and I worked, and I found out you work hard, most time you can keep a job. And so, again, after another 12, 15 years there, I moved back home. And so in 68, I moved back home. And then between the church, ministered at the church, I took 3 years. I went to the mission field as a missionary. And so from 68 to, like I say, what, 79, I think I stayed home here. Then in 79, I went to Mission Field, and I come back home again.
Was it a lot different for you when you came back home in 68 after the school had been closed?
Yeah, no. To me, again, a lot of these things, tell somebody to take the time and stir you up with some something to complain about. If nobody don't tell you the difference, it don't make no difference. I remember a time as children, me and the little white boy next door get out there in the mud hole together, we wrestled together, we fought together, we played together. If there's any scraps coming up there, his mother, father, they take him in the house and give him a whipping, and I get in the house. But we got along fine until they got bigger, and some of them start telling with you this and all that, and again, and so I had to start stirring up the difference. And even then, I remember some of the boys around here that some of us still live, because I remember the attitude was something that was taught into the children. I think a lot of us right now still some of the same type of thing. But I knew the lawyer's son at W.A. Dixon, where we had two boys, Amos and Andy. We got along fine. The auto little son, we got along fine. The grocer, Paul, and his boys, so we got along fine until somebody started stirring up some us and them, and when they start talking the difference and they had the difference, then you start to want to compete and show the difference.
Yeah. Do you think, or when did those changes start happening? Was the Rosenwald School still functioning? Was the Rosenwald School closed?
The Rosenwald School had done close then. They closed, I think it closed that school, I'm not sure, but I think in 59 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the New York area, I think, at the time when they closed it. But they closed that school and they integrated the white school over here.
How did that go?
Well, again, I didn't have a problem with it. I think it went along fine because my daughter ended up going over there.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, the same thing. I remember Catherine Ames, who was a black teacher, if Tyus talked too much with her, she'd give her an X. And so the same thing, I remember, there's another lady down on the beach there, it was a similar type of thing. And Tyus and her fast mouth, and she'd give her an X for talking too. So the same old thing. And I remember here, off and on right now, if she come home, she might stop by and see if that lady, the white lady down there, was still alive and so forth. If she did, she called a little hello and whatnot and so forth. So the children didn't make no difference until somebody started teaching the difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you remember at all, I mean, probably been your parents that would have told you stories. Do you remember stories being told about when the school was built and how important it was to you, the community?
I don't remember anything about them saying it much about it. I doubt if they knew anything about it. That Rosenwald business of that school, I would say in the last 20, 30 years, somebody might have opened up their idea and said something about it and so forth there, but I doubt if they knew it. And right now, again, it's something that it's being opened up, it's being talked about, and if you dig into it, it's a reality, but a lot of people never knew nothing about the difference of it. All they know is it was a school, it was a school, it was a school.
Yeah.
And like I say, I don't think my parents knew that much about it at all.
Were they proud to have sent their children to such a great school? Or was it just an everyday school for them?
It was just an everyday school. Because actually, like it was, that school there was one of a few brick buildings. And if you get into the county, some of the county had some frame buildings, but that was a brick building that was built for the blacks, built for the blacks. And so like right now, it's still some of the county schools that they were built by the county, and white and black went there, and some of them were brick and some of them were frame.
So cool.
And you want to buy a good building, a lot of land and so forth, you go buy one of them buildings there because they got asbestos in them and you can't do nothing with them. Mm.
Just have to tear it down.
You got to do more processing than what you think it's worth it, but there's quite a few of them buildings right now. And they're good looking buildings from the outside and so forth. But they got that asbestos in them and because again, they had steam heat and whatnot there. Mm. I don't know how that building got that steam heat in it, but it had, I think, hot air heat in it.
Wow. Now, did your building have hot air and heat, or was it just?
It was hot air.
Wow, that's nice. Yeah. So our buildings at ODU don't even work half the time. They're either hot in the summer or cold in the winter. Right?
Exactly.
They're awful. So now I've heard that you are known as the bishop around here. So. Did you enjoy did you go to seminary school, missionary school?
Now, I had some schooling.
Mm-hmm.
I when I acknowledged my calling, I went to Manhattan Bible Institute, and I took two or three courses over there between evangelism, general Bible, and so forth there. And again, a lot of the rest of that is between some smaller courses or whatnot there, but I wasn't one of them that went through Bible college and got a degree as a theologian. But see, that a lot of that depends on the denomination you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
There's some Pentecostals that the pastor, you think that the Lord wants you to preach, you get your leader's permission and you start to studying and do what you can. And sometimes you go to school and take some courses and sometimes no, but then there are others like AME and some of them as if to say, if you think you're supposed to be preaching, they say you got a 10-hour school for like 4 or 5 years and they'll authorize you to 1 degree. And then if you think that you're supposed to be pastoring or whatnot there, so could you take another 2 or 3 years of schooling and get your degree, and then we'll let you pastor, see? So it depends on your denomination. The Baptists don't bother with all of their preliminaries. They have the different hoops they put you through and so forth. And so it depends on the affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't allow women preachers, and that they got so nowadays they do. They like a lot of other things, they accept changes in life. And one say we do it this way, and later on, two or three come along and vote and say, let's do it another way.
Yeah. So what was it like for you after you left the Manhattan Bible Institute? Did you immediately come back here and start preaching?
Yeah, because after I got out of Manhattan, this church where I'm at now, didn't have a pastor. And then it was a little small country town and so forth there. And some of the older leaders died out, and the younger ones moved away or whatnot there. And so at that time, this church didn't have a pastor, but my family and others that knew me was more or less looking it over for a pastor, and I felt this is where I should be, and I made the moves and come down, and I was ordained and whatnot, and I'm still here.
How many years have you been with the church?
That was 1969 when I was ordained.
So has your has the membership in the church, has it grown since then? Has it decreased since then?
Both.
Both.
Like I say, the older ones died out, and it depends on your denomination, it depends on your teaching, and a lot of that is how well it grows and how it does not grow. And it's a type of thing that, well, all over the world now, you got the big mega churches and so forth there.
Yeah.
They talk about the thousand, but then again, like the Chinese and Korean and so forth, they talk about millions in the congregation, see, and so some around here bragging on hundreds of, but there's Korean congregation, there's millions of people and so forth. So some again, and like it is, some of us are good, sincere ministers, and some of us are otherwise.
So what makes you stay here and keep Charles? You told me you kept coming back. You leave and you come back, and you leave and you come back. Is there something here that just sticks with you?
Now, when I, since I come back in 69 and was ordained, I only left one time on a temporary situation on the mission field for 3.5 years. But outside of that, it's something I don't know whether I can explain it to you or whether you hear it and accept it, but, and you look at life in many cases, you wonder how they work that way with you and don't work that way with them. I accept it as a calling. I don't know whether you know that word or not, but in the ministry, or as a Christian,
mm-hmm.
there's a word, calling. The scripture, I think it's Paul, talked about the fact of a calling. And so it depends how you receive that word calling and how you obey that word calling. And some accept it to a degree and walk away from it, and some don't. And I yet fit in the don't class yet. Yeah, so, but that calling comes in a way of a conviction, and it comes with the, between the word and the spirit of God, that it leaves a conviction, and that's where the difference comes, and that's where part of the same thing, whether they do or don't, how fast they hold to the conviction, how sincere they about it. And some again, the whole idea of being a Christian depends how sincere you're about it.
Yeah. Is your congregation pretty sincere? Do they show up regularly, or do they come every once in a while?
The few I have. you don't get if they're not sincere, they won't stay. They kind of go their own way. They listen to their own, what's the word I want? Leading. They look to their own leading, their own guidance. And sometimes it lines up perfectly with the word, and sometimes it don't. And if they listen to their own guidance, they suit themselves good or bad. And otherwise, they do what they feel God wants them to do, and they stay with it. And that difference too. But
so it's a whole quality, not quantity thing.
Right.
Makes sense. Are any of your parishioners, do they also attend the Rosenwald School?
They have, yes.
Do you guys talk about it a lot?
Well, one of them is Diane. She went through there and so forth there. And her sisters and brothers too, although they're not here now, but she had 4 brothers and sisters, they all went through there. I got 2, well, I had 4 brothers and sisters there, but they, we all went through there. But they're like myself now, they're the ages they done been through for years ago.
Do you feel that the Rosenwald School helped prepare you especially well for being a minister, for being the bishop of your church?
Yes, in two ways. I'll tell you why I say so. There's some things you're taught and you don't know the value of it, and yet still it has its value, and later on it sugars up. I tell people a lot of times that I'm basically colorblind, and I am. I took two physicals in New York City for the Transit Authority, and on their subways and so forth, they got lights down there that all colors of lights in here and there and so forth, and I failed the colorblind test twice.
So you didn't work for the Transit Authority?
No. But on the same hand, I've learned to, even right here in Cape Charles, when I moved back home in 98, I ran for town council. And so when I did, I found out that I had come here knowing black and white, and I'm not dumb enough to think that it's not a difference, but I got along with the white as well as I did the black to a degree. When I was voted for council, I had more white votes than I did black. And again, the 8 years I was on, I got along with everybody, the white as well as the black, because I said I was colorblind naturally, so. But again, racially and whatnot there, I basically dealt in the colorblindness. And I get along with the town, whether it's the town police or the firemen or whoever it is. What's fair is fair, and never mind us and them or whatnot there, you and I, it don't make no difference. Yeah. And I guess it's just something grew up in me. I tell people I know what it is. They've gone through segregation and whatnot there, but it don't bother me. I wherever and whatever, do what you gotta do.
Yeah, it seems like you seize every opportunity that comes your way.
I try.
Do you tend to, just from the stories you tell me, it seems like you embrace change. Do you enjoy change, or do you just take it in stride?
Well, I heard something one time, and it's the idea of change. The idea of change depends. I don't have a problem with change, but long as it's for progress.
Good point.
I don't have a problem with the change, but if it's for good, then fine. But just to be changing, or just because somebody else's ideas, it don't make me no difference. I accept a change at a heartbeat, and I try to see what's a reality, and if it's for good, fine. I don't have a problem with change. And like it was, I remember sometimes, even when I was on council, I see some things I thought need changing. Man, I said, well, we just changed that 2 years ago. I said, well, I think we need to change it back, so we changed it back. And after the fight a year or two there, and fussing and voting and whatnot, that, oh, okay, we'll accept the fact that change was good for that idea, but I don't think it was good for this idea. And I take what goes, you know, what's good and what's bad, and deal with it.
Has the town of Cape Charles, has it changed for the good since you were a child? Or has it changed for the bad, would you say? Or has it stayed about the same?
I don't think it's necessarily changed for good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to deal with life. And life brings about some change you have to learn to accept. And part of that is like I used to do before I was in the Army with. I was a diesel mechanic and he was a steam mechanic. And he could out argue me on the fact of a steam locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
And he could tell me how it was better and the advantage of it and whatnot. And my only point that made me win my argument was I say, you tell me why they are throwing away them old iron horses and spending millions of dollars to replace them with diesel. And so there was an advantage to diesel and so forth. And I stuck with what I felt was an advantage. And he'd argue with me, we fussed and whatnot the whole time. It was in peacefully so, but I think the whole town is just like it is. You had to go through some of the changes of time. I remember years ago, the town was a railroad town.
Yeah.
And so the railroad done gone out of business though, just about. We got enough railroad over there to kind of say it's a railroad, but nothing to write home about and get excited about.
Mm-hmm.
But the railroad's gone out, and they're trying to make it a town with golf and sports. And the change is coming, but in time of the change, it's a slow process. People, old ones died out. The younger ones say, well, hey, we want a tourist attraction. We want to have a this and that. These things have changed. And I say, fine, but you got to deal with the fact that still some of these people here can't deal. They end up going on that the tourist is going to supply a livelihood. So you're going to need some blue collar work. You're going to need somebody making $10 an hour shoveling coal or doing mechanic or farming or whatnot. That everybody ain't going to be able to say, we got to have a pizza parlor on the train ride now for tourists.
Wow. It's a beautiful town.
It's beautiful. But see, and all that comes with town. See, I lived here, and to me, I knew what it was to go down on this beach here, and I knew what it was seaside and bayside. I didn't see nothing so big about a waterfront property and so forth. I lived at the waterfront down there because I lost 3 or 4 friends. They got drowned down there and so forth. So what I knew was a waterfront, but she comes here and she adores the waterfront. She adores the bird watchers. I knew the place down there, the Fort Custis and the area and whatnot there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know the difference in a blackbird and a crow, but I didn't know nothing about no bird watchers and so forth there.
Me neither.
There's people here that travel hundreds of miles and for this bird watchers. They know the difference of a whole lot of these birds. And some of it right over here. I remember when they first built this industrial park, I took a walk through. They had a walking place from the building out to the water, and in there they had again bird watchers and so forth. And like I say, I know a pigeon from a blackbird, but the admiration for birds.
I'm the same way. I know a couple birds, but that's about it. They all sound like birds.
Uh-huh. So yes, you live and learn, as my father used to say, and you die and forget it all. Some of it, you take it and you deal with it. I like the boating and the fishing and whatnot there and so forth. And even that guy, so one man told me my boat was a yard ornament. didn't look like I was doing much fishing. It was there as an ornament decorating the yard.
I guess one of my last questions for you will just be, have you been over to the Rosenwald School recently? Have you seen it in the last couple of years?
Sure, I've been in and out of there. I've been in and out of there for the, we dedicated the marker for the school here about, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And so I've been in and out of there, and I keep a watch on it. I'm part of the initiative there, so I keep a good watch on it. I can't do much about it because it ain't ours, but we watch for it and hope to make some changes, and maybe later on we get control of it or whatnot there, but I keep a good watch on it.
What type of changes are you looking to make? I know you guys are hoping to buy it, right? Buy the land and buy the school back?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, find something useful for it. And this area here, as it is right now, we could use a convention center.
Oh yeah, sounds like the school was big enough.
Yes, big enough, and got land enough around it. So I don't know where the money gonna come from.
Well, hopefully we get the interviews out and get those circulating and get some donors in here for you.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see the school.
That's where we're going next.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, things just popped into my head as you talk. So during the time that you were at the Rosenwald, at the Cape Charles Elementary, actually, right?
Yeah.
What was the role of churches and the community in the school? Did the churches and the community, were they involved, or did they stay away?
To a degree, there was an involvement there, but it wasn't announced as much. That you heard me talk about this Alice Moses and so forth. We come to school in the morning. We had a small, I think you would call it more or less a chapel, or a time first thing in the morning that we took the time for a pledge of allegiance and a word of prayer. This was every morning. The teachers pushed it forward, and the whole school went that way. Especially over there now, I don't know what they did the other, but we always. And so again, the teachers that I knew of, teachers during those days, it was an identity. You didn't see teachers out doing some of any and everything. Their manner was that of a distinction. You knew that was Miss Moses. And you knew she was a teacher, so you didn't see her drinking and boozing and partying and all this. W.A. Smith, that was, I found out years later, they might have had some of them little quiet spots and belonged to clubs where they did certain things. But the teachers held an example. And that example was, I wouldn't say it was announced by the church, but it was respectful enough that it would be approved by the church.
Did the community follow in the teacher's footsteps? Did they try to live up to the teacher's standards? Did the students do that?
Students, I think it was good for the students. Now again, how good it was and so forth, life has a thing. I had something happen to me this past week. A young man, and he started picking on me. He didn't pick on me anyway, but he identified me and him because I married him about 10 years ago. And so I said, where's my wife? And so he said, I think he said she was in Philly and he lived in Jersey. I said, what's she doing over there? And so when I chewed on him a little bit as if say, why are you not with her and whatnot? And so he started telling me some of the things that we do many times. You know how you take some things that this is the way the world says it and this is the way everybody thinks of it and so forth there. And part of it was yes, and part of it was sort of it was not quite in line with the Bible. And so I was in the barber shop, and I saw this book up there on the counter, and it was an old Bible that the barber had left laying around there for years, and they read it occasionally, so forth. And it wasn't one I was familiar with because I got a variety of Bibles, but this was an interpretation I didn't know, but. And what he was saying, it was so far out of line. I went and got this Bible, and I showed it to him, and this and that. And he began to read it, and I let him read it. I said, well, now what does that say there? And that said enough contrary to his thinking and so forth. And so we went on about three or four different verses, and I didn't pay as much attention to it as the barber did, but he got on his cell phone, somebody must have called him on his phone or something. So he got up and he listened to his phone and he walked out the door. And so the barber says, don't look for him to come back. You don't put him in the Bible that he ain't coming back and he'll wait till he'll leave you. He got nothing that he wanted to see in that Bible. and so there are people that take their choice, and you know, what what they think is right, fine, what they feel they want to do that's good. And someone say yes to what the Bible says, and someone says but, and they throw a but in there. And I say the but is like the goat. The Bible talks about the sheep as being preferable to the children of God, but the goat is those that contrary. So.
I just have one thing that I'm really curious about. What did your parents do? Your dad, what was his work?
My father, years ago, and somebody got on this here, not too long ago, I think it was, I was listening to the Baldwins up here the other day. My father and his brother, years ago, they drove a tractor on the farm for G.L. Webster. Mm-hmm. Webster had one of the bigger farms in the area. He had farm equipment that strode from Kip to Pete on up past Eastfield there. You look at old Diamond T trucks and farm hall tractors and so forth there, four-wheel trailers and so forth, they're hauling produce and fruit and cannery and whatnot there. So my father and his brother drove truck and tracking stuff for G.L. Webster for years. But in later years, he bought taxes. And so in this area here, we go back as far as 1940, 41 or 42, we had about 32 taxes in this Cape Charles area. Between Cape Charles and let's say Matchapunga, we had 32 taxes. And my father had three. There was another fellow here, Cook, had four. And around, it was one, two, and three throughout the community. And my father ran taxes up until he died.
Wow, interesting. So it sounds to me like the community must have valued education. And obviously your father expected you to do well in school, and then, and your parents, and then to move on to high school. Did most of the kids have that value in their families?
Well, I will say something. I don't know how much he expected, but he taught me the value of a whip and correction and being a decent son. He taught me that, and I guess that led up to the rest of it.
Right. Well, what? Did everybody go to high school?
We had quite a school scholarship and so forth. Yes, definitely. The white and the blacks, we had, I don't remember having any buses, but right now, I worked school board for a while, but we had buses running up down here, and they went to school, and there were schools around here, too. I got a book. Mr. Bell and I went up to the
museum
thing here the last time it was over at, was it the Nancock, I believe it was. And this lady had wrote this book, and she had a listing of the schools throughout the county. And there were schools enough around here for white and black, rich and poor, and a lot of times you didn't have to worry about running all over town to get to it. I was surprised when Mr. Bell was telling me it was one school right across the road from where he lived at, and it was an old frame school there, but it was a school. And I know I remember one school that I went to was up on what they call Crossroad at that time. Now they call it Pet Town Road, but again, it was a school over there, and the teachers, they taught the difference. Now, like I said, you hear me talk about this little man at the school talking about the detention class. And we had an old man around here, they called him Mr. McCune. And Mr. McCune was the principal at this school over there at Pet Town Road. And as far as he was concerned, you was taught manners, you were taught discipline and so forth there. And it wasn't no thing choosing whether you want to or not. He taught you, and if you didn't like his teaching, you had a problem, because he was very firm. And just like I remember up at the high school, we had a fellow that, Jeff Banks, when I went to the high school, and even when it was all black, as far as he was concerned, J.F. Banks wasn't a bad man, he wasn't a hard man, and so forth, but J.F. Banks was firm enough, and he had a manner about him to a degree that you knew what it was to be disciplined. And he come out there in that hall, and that high school at the time had his office was sitting like here, and the steps that go upstairs was over here, a classroom was over there, a classroom was over there, and the steps that went downstairs was over here. But he could come out of his office, he could just watch everything that went around at that school to a degree, and he see you out of your class, young lady, why are you out of your class? And you didn't have a worthwhile answer. He said, go tell Miss Bell I sent you. Miss Bell was the janitor. And that meant you were going to rake some leaves or do something, helping her clean up and do some janitorial work. And I didn't know him necessarily with a whip or a rule or whatnot there, but he was firm enough. Any young man my age, or give or take, maybe 10 years younger, and a lot of the older one. You mentioned J.F. Banks. Mm-hmm. J.F. Banks left his mark, and it was a well-mannered young man throughout the county. And not only him, it was plenty of them around here. Alice Moses was over here at this school. We had a lady, I remember was in Cateville School, and again, a lady, but she got the job done. She let you know you was to be disciplined, and she was gonna see to it. And but all around that, you were well. There were those that did a good job to say, teach and bring a child up decently. And again, children went to school. You didn't decide where you want to go or not. Like I told you, this lady, she whipped her son all the way back to school and made sure he went to school. You didn't have no, what they had a thing where they, I'm not thinking of the word right now, but when the children didn't go to school, that the city and the town forced them, so it didn't have no sense of that. Mom and daddy made the difference.
Wow, that's wonderful. Okay. Well, I could go on and on. But
oh, I know.
But, Clarence Small is expecting us. So.
Okay.
So it was lovely.